Micah 6:8. He has shown you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God. And Luke 4:14-21. Jesus returned to Galilee in the power of the Spirit, and news about him spread through the whole countryside. He was teaching in their synagogues, and everyone praised him. He went to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, and on the Sabbath day he went into the synagogue, as was his custom. He stood up to read, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. Unrolling it, he found the place where it is written, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Then he rolled up the scroll, gave it back to the attendant, and sat down. The eyes of everyone in the synagogue were fastened on him. He began by saying to them, "Today this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing." We are pleased to have Kevin Nofziger here with us this morning. Kevin currently serves as Business Development Officer at Assets Lancaster, and he wholeheartedly believes in Assets Equation, that inclusive entrepreneurship plus ethical business equals transformed communities. In the past, Kevin has served in various roles with Everence, Choice Books, and the Factory Ministries, all unique organizations with one foot in the business world and one in the social sector, committed not only to the bottom line, but also to people, ethical, and impactful business practices. Kevin and his wife live between Lancaster and Leola with their two kids and two cats. Their family enjoys watching movies, reading, hosting international students, and playing games. They attend Forest Hills Mennonite Church, and we would like to give Kevin a warm welcome. Thank you.
I'm sorry, it's my fault that you have to use this. I requested
no
that. Thank you for the invitation this morning. Symbolism is important to me. This is one of the first times I've probably preached in jeans. Munsterman's. Hi. And I also am wanting to sit this morning. Steve emailed me earlier, a couple of weeks ago, and asked me to preach an assets sermon. And I hadn't written an assets sermon. I had been thinking about doing it for months. We started talking about it last year, and he forced me to do it. And when I got into it, I realized an asset sermon is going to be a lot about injustice. It's ironic. This month is Black History Month. I am a white male talking about injustice this morning. I am not a professional in this at all. I am very inadequate. I have not experienced much injustice in my life. So who am I to speak about the justice of Jesus? So I'm sitting today because I don't want to project like I know what I'm talking about. Not that when a preacher stands, they project that they know what they're talking about. But I'm coming pretty well like, hey, it's not lost on me that I'm sitting here, the color that I am with the upbringing that I have had, talking about the justice that Jesus is trying to teach us. Assets is a fascinating nonprofit that I did not know a lot about before I started working there. MEDA, Mennonite Economic Development Associates, started Assets 30 years ago. So in 2023, we celebrated our 30th anniversary. For those of you that know MEDA, last year they also celebrated their 70th anniversary. So we had a kind of a joint celebration in some ways. Assets was started by MEDA to do similar work that they do overseas, microloans and helping people alleviate alleviate poverty through business, they wanted to start something in the States doing similar things. So they started about a dozen different assets programs around the country. Today, there's two of us that still exist, here and one in Toledo, Ohio. We do two things. We do community lending, where we make micro loans. We're a certified development financial institution, a CDFI. I had never heard of CDFIs until 2 years ago when I started working at Assets. So if you've never heard of a CDFI, that's okay. There's two of us in Lancaster. Community First Fund is the other one. And we make loans to people that do not have credit or have bad credit. We also do entrepreneur training. We have idea incubators and boot camps to help people understand more about starting businesses. What's unique about Assets is that our target clientele are women entrepreneurs and BIPOC entrepreneurs. BIPOC stands for Black Indigenous People of Color. So in many ways, I feel very much in the minority at Assets. My team is very diverse, and the people we work with do not look like me. So it's been a fascinating journey over the last 2 years, learning more about what is injustice, discrimination, and equity. So what is justice? If I'm going to talk about the justice of Jesus this morning, what is justice? I found four different definitions of justice. We're going to talk about one of them really this morning, but two of them that I understand well. One that I grew up understanding justice to be, which is usually what we understand when we think of justice, is retributive justice. That is based on punishment for wrongdoing. You're going to get justice for what you've done. You commit a crime, you're going to pay for that. Another one is distributive justice or economic justice, determining who gets what. A third one is more of this procedural justice, egalitarian, determining how fairly people are treated. And the last one is restorative justice, which ties to the restoration or right relationships. Another way of looking at it, and this is from actually a quote from my pastor talking about justice at Forest Hills, John Carlson. He says the distinction between justice intuitively understood as people getting what they deserve versus justice understood as people getting what they need is always intriguing. Some call it Greek versus Israelite understandings, but that's probably oversimplified. It's really retributive and distributive justice, which is a better way to think about it. So, justice can be a very difficult word to wrap ourselves around. Why should we care about justice, first of all? So we've got a definition a little bit of what it is. Why should we care about it? There is a history of injustice in our country that growing up I never knew about. One of them I did. Slavery was obviously something that we were taught in school. So that was kind of this big, huge, historical black mark on our country where injustice was done to an entire group of people. But there's another form of injustice, and there's a lot of examples I could give, but there's one that I want to highlight that really ties to the work that we're doing at Assets, and that is something called redlining, which again is something I'd never heard about. Redlining is another example of injustice that we've experienced in our country. Not we. Some of us have experienced. I certainly have not. It can be defined as a discriminatory practice that consists of the systemic denial of services such as mortgages, insurance loans, and other financial services to residents of a certain area based on their race or ethnicity. Redlining in neighborhoods, one of a number of explicitly racist United States federal housing policies in the mid-20th century, blocked black households and other communities of color from accessing home mortgages, and as a result, home ownership for decades. So you've heard of things called, maybe you haven't, but I've heard of people talking about driving while black. We've heard of that over the last couple of years with some of the things that have happened with people being stopped just because they're black. Well, just last week I heard a new phrase, banking while black, which is a real thing for people from the from that community. Again, something I've never experienced. But there's been a history in our country of discrimination based on someone's color. This morning, as I mentioned the word to somebody that we were, as we were talking about the church service this morning, she said, the community that they live in, 5 minutes from here, in 1962 when they started this community, it was explicitly written in, this is in Lancaster County, a neighborhood that is right close to us here, it was written into the deeds that said, people of color are not allowed to live in this neighborhood. That's redlining. An example of redlining. I can't even fathom that. But that was real, and that's part of our identity, not just as Americans, but as even people in Lancaster County. So one reason we should care about justice, the justice of Jesus and the reality of injustice, is because it is part of who we are. It's also biblical. Jesus cared a lot about injustice. In the passage of scripture that was read, first of all, Micah 6:8, I used as a kind of an introductory passage because that has been a very formative passage for me. What does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with our God. For me, it all boils down to that. That's what it means to be a follower of Jesus. But I find it interesting that Jesus chose what he chose, the passage of scripture he chose when he did his coming out sermon. So the passage that was read this morning was from Luke 4. And it was basically Jesus' first sermon. He could have preached on anything. And he chose Isaiah 61. And he said, the Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to preach the good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim the freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to release the oppressed and proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. There are so many examples in the Old Testament of prophets caring about injustice and prophets calling the children of Israel to care about injustice. So what does Jesus do when he shows up at the temple to preach his first sermon? He takes the most famous passage from the Bible at the time, the only thing they had at the time, the Old Testament, from Isaiah, and he uses that as his inaugural address to the people of Israel, to the people present. And it's interesting, it is biblical to care about justice, but it almost got him killed. Because if you follow it down to a few verses later, it says, all the people in the synagogue, because this is Luke 4:28, all the people in the synagogue were furious when they heard this. Now, they heard a few other things, too. He kind of extrapolated some of this sermon. They got up, drove him out of town, and took him to the brow of the hill on which the town was built in order to throw him down the cliff. But he walked right through the crowd and went away. They nearly threw him off a cliff for what he was saying. This is controversial. More on that in a bit, but I also want to point out that this is also Anabaptist. So, Stuart Murray wrote a book, The Naked Anabaptist, fascinating title, and he identifies justice as one of the core concerns of the early Anabaptists. He writes, many of the early Anabaptists had been deeply involved in campaigning for social, economic, and political justice before they joined the movement, and continued to pursue these concerns as Anabaptists. So not only is it something that's part of our American history, of who we are as a people, it's biblical, and it's even Anabaptist to care about the injustices that we see in this world. It is so controversial that there was a Brazilian Catholic archbishop named Haider Camara, he lived from 1909 to 1999. He said something one time about the poor. He said, when I give food to the poor, they call me a saint. When I ask why they are poor, they call me a communist. It's interesting, a lot of times as American Christians, we do not agree on justice. As American Mennonites, we don't agree on this topic. There's been two words that have really helped me understand some of this paradox that I've watched as a people of God trying to understand this whole idea of loving justice. And the two words are orthodoxy and orthopraxy. I'm sure you've heard of orthodoxy already. Orthodoxy is the emphasis on correct belief or private morality, if you will. Orthopraxy emphasizes correct actions, which some people would say would be this whole idea of social justice. Those are two important parts of what it means to be followers of Jesus. Sometimes as Jesus followers we get this right, but many times we do not. Timothy Keller wrote a book that I've been trying to go through. It's called Generous Justice. And I have not read the whole thing, but there's a section in here that I want to read to us. So I have two little kids, I've done a lot of reading to them. They're getting older, so I don't read as much as I used to out loud. I read a little bit this morning in a book that my son has to read for class. So bear with me as I read to you, like I used to read to my kids. A part of this passage, it says, what did Jesus say about justice from his book? And think about how things feel right now in our country, politically, but how things feel right now in our church as Mennonites. Whether we are MCUSA Mennonites or Lancaster Conference Mennonites or conservative Mennonites or progressive Mennonites, whatever we are, which we might be all different things in this room, and to be Mennonite now could be many of those things. Listen to what he perceives, and he's not a Mennonite. And I'm not sure what he is for sure after reading this book. But he's talking about this struggle, I think, of what does it mean to be a Jesus follower today in America and understand how to marry this idea of orthodoxy with orthopraxy. And he really takes it into common language. So instead of trying to basically flower it up with my own words and basically quote him a bunch, I'm just going to read what he wrote. So bear with me here. And then he's also going to end this section with an example of a missionary inviting a non-Christian to church and how practical it gets when we talk about sharing the gospel and preaching the good news to people on the mission field. So it's pretty amazing. In both of the gospels of Matthew and Luke, Jesus delivers a famous discourse, which is usually called the Sermon on the Mount. For centuries, readers have acknowledged the beauty of its high ethical standards. What it's not noticed very often is how Jesus weaves into the whole cloth what we could today call private morality and social justice, orthodoxy and orthopraxy. Along with the well-known prohibitions against sexual lust in the heart, adultery, and divorce, there are calls to give to the poor and to refrain from overwork and materialism. In Western society, these sets of concerns have often been split from one another. In fact, each of America's two main political parties has built its platform on one of these sets of ethical prescriptions to the near exclusion of the other. Conservatism stresses the importance of personal morality, especially the importance of traditional sexual morals and hard work, and feels that liberal charges of racism and social injustice are overblown. On the other hand, liberalism stresses social justice and considers conservative emphasis on moral virtue to be prudish and psychologically harmful. Each side, of course, thinks the other side is smug and self-righteous. Sound familiar? This book was written almost 10 years ago, maybe longer. It is not only the political parties that fail to reflect the whole cloth, biblical agenda, the churches of America are often more controlled by the surrounding political culture than the spirit of Jesus and the prophets. Ouch. Conservative churches tend to concentrate on one set of sins, while liberal ones concentrate on another set. Jesus, like the Old Testament prophets, does not see two categories of morality. In Amos 2:7, we read, "They trample on the heads of the poor, father and son go into the same girl." The prophet condemns social justice and sexual licentiousness in virtually the same breath. Such denunciations cut across all current controversial political agendas. The biblical perspective sees sexual immorality and material selfishness as both flowing from self-centeredness rather than God-centeredness. And here's the example of where the rubber really meets the road when we're talking about people in church. Raymond Fung, an evangelist in Hong Kong, tells of how he was speaking to a textile worker about the Christian faith, and he urged him to come and visit a church. The man could not go to a service on a Sunday morning without losing a day's wages. But he did so. After the service, Fung and the man went to lunch. The worker said, "Well, the sermon hit me." It had been about sin. "What the preacher said was true of me. Laziness, a violent temper, an addiction to cheap entertainment." Fung held his breath, trying to control his excitement. Had the gospel message gotten through? He was disappointed. "Nothing was said about my boss," the man said to Fung. When the preacher had gone through the list of sins, he had said nothing about how he employs child laborers, how he doesn't give the legally required holidays, how he puts on false labels, how he forces us to do overtime. Fung knew that the members of the management class were sitting in the congregation, but those sins were never mentioned. The textile worker agreed that he was a sinner, but he rejected the message of the church because he has sensed his incompleteness. Its incompleteness. We cannot separate these two things. They are both important. Of course, how I live my personal life and morally what I believe is important. My thoughts, my temper, how I spend my time. But how we treat people matters. How we have treated people throughout our history matters. I would argue that we as Anabaptists have tried to have this conversation in some really authentic ways, I think for decades. It has caused division. It has caused angst. But we are trying to be faithful. And I appreciate that about our heritage, about who we are as Anabaptist Christians. All the more we need to have these conversations. The society, the political environment, and the church environment that Keller described in this chapter is so real today. And we're going to hear a lot of it this year. As the election comes, how are we living in a faithful way, not just taking captive thoughts, not yelling at my kids, being faithful to my wife? Those are moral things. The private morality of the Christian walk is important. Orthodoxy. But correct actions are also important. How I live every day. The social justice part of what does it mean to be a Jesus follower is just as important. And Jesus and the prophets all the way through the entire Bible continue to remind us of that. It was interesting. I was at a very fancy name, philanthropic symposium. at Bent Creek Country Club, of all places, here a couple weeks ago. It was a group. It was not Everence, although Everence would put this kind of thing on. It was a group of a financial advisory group put this on for their clients. So there was people of high net worth in there. There was nonprofits in there. There was a lot of mixture of people, but there was a panel, and one person that was part was speaking to the on the panel is a leader of a local foundation that helps people, a lot of business owners, people of all makes, all, everybody makes, like all different kinds of people give their money away. Helping people be generous with their money. People that often are very charitable. We're talking a lot about charity. Be charitable. You've got all sorts of ways. Everence talks about different ways that we can be charitable, be generous with what we've been given. Giving money is an act of charity. But he made a comment and he lives in the space of charity, where he's always helping people give their money away. But he made a comment, and I nearly fell out of my chair, because his comment was straight on the social justice side of things. He sat there and he said, if you're a business owner, and this is kind of out of the blue, he said, if you're a business owner and you're not paying a fair wage to your employees, you should not give a dime to a nonprofit. I work for a nonprofit. My job is to fundraise for a nonprofit. Yet I wanted to stand up and clap when I heard that. That's justice. It's easy to make a bunch of money and give a bunch of money away. Some of us are gifted to make a bunch of money. And that's okay. Give a bunch of money away. That's what I used to preach when I was at Everence. Give your money away. Give it away. What's enough? I used to preach off of Philippians 4:13. You know, the idea of 11 and 12 is a whole idea of contentment. Be content with what you have. The secret to giving to contentment is Jesus. I don't know how many times I probably preached that sermon here many years ago. But what this man was talking about was justice, not charity. We need both. How are we treating people? Are we willing to have the hard conversations about a fair wage? Even though redlining as it existed, maybe doesn't exist anymore, there's still systemic things that are hurting people of color, that are holding them back. Assets exist because of some of those systemic problems. Lancaster County is an incredibly prosperous, wealthy county. Probably per capita, one of the most amazing in the nation. We live in an amazing county, an amazing area. Whether you like the extra give or not, I know that's becoming a controversial thing in Lancaster County within Christians a lot of times, but that the extra give shows how generous this county is. For eight years, it was more every year. It peaked at, I think, $12 million. In one day, we can raise $12 million in Lancaster County in a 24-hour period. We're an extraordinary people group here in Lancaster County. However, there's another side to Lancaster County that some of us don't see. Lancaster County is also the number one per capita county in the country for refugee resettlement. Did you know that? We're known across the country as being a place that's a welcoming community for people that are refugees coming from other places. Most of the time, those are people of color. Many times, those are people that are not as well off as I am, and probably as some of us in this room are. Their experience with Lancaster County and the economy of Lancaster County is not quite the same as what I'm experiencing. We coexist in the same community. We have people coming from Kenya that are interacting with the Amish. Those are incredibly different worldviews. We have Muslims coming from Syria that are living amongst us, and their experience are very different than what a lot of ours are. So I could talk a long time on this, and I'm not going to. I just want us to be aware that this call to Jesus, from Jesus, this biblical call, I think, is of discipleship, needs to marry orthodoxy with orthopraxy. And you are going to be constantly pulled to separate the two and choose a side. When you vote, you choose a side. When you decide what church you go to, you often are choosing a side. When you want to argue a topic, you'll want to choose a side. I'm going to try more and more to say it's got to be a both and. It's got to be yes and. Because Jesus calls us to both orthodoxy and orthopraxy. Justice is not a zero-sum game. We can all win. And that's part of what an organization like Assets is trying to do. We are creating access to finances, to loans for people that want to start a small business that are immigrants from another country sometimes, that are not the same skin color as me, that don't have a rich uncle or a rich dad that could loan me $10,000 if I wanted to start a business. And that's what this organization is attempting to do to help make people's lives better. There's many organizations out there doing many good things. But I want us to continue. My point this morning is not to even preach about Assets. It's to preach about justice. And what does it mean to live in that space of the justice of Jesus? And recognizing, whether we want to admit it or not, there is a lot of injustice in this world. And we can make a difference by the way we live. Sometimes, I don't even know what time it is. It's 11:30. When do you want me to stop? I can stop right now. I can also do a little bit of a call to action. It's easy to feel guilty, especially if you're sitting here as a white, affluent male or female. What can I do? I can't help my skin color. I can't help that I was born on a Mennonite farm in Ohio with generations of wealth. Now, wealth is all relative. I'm very rich compared to many people in this world. I can't help that. That's how I am. And there's nothing to be, I shouldn't feel guilty for that. But how can we today in Lancaster County, as normal abiding citizens, law-abiding citizens, make a difference? One is, be intentional about your charity. Think through where you're giving your money. Don't stop giving to Water Street. Don't stop giving to your mission agency or to a youth center. But you could start being creative and looking for organizations that are doing justice work also. Because you do want ones that spread the word of God in deed and in word. You can even get more gritty or more intentional. Well, one thing is if you're a business owner, ouch, I'm going to offend you here maybe. Pay a fair wage to your employees. Think through how you're treating the people that work for you. How are you doing with benefits? How much vacation time do you give them? What's the culture like of your business? Another is choose intentional where you shop. My dad used to never, ever, it was a funny conviction we used to make fun of him for. He wouldn't shop at Walmart. For whatever reasons he had, he never wanted to shop at Walmart. And we would pick on him relentlessly about that. Today, I look back and think that's fascinating. We can be very intentional about where we shop for things. Many times, we're not intentional at all. We just shop where it's cheapest. And I don't blame you. But there are some times where you can be intentional. When it comes Christmas time, go down into the city. Choose places to get gift cards to or buy products from black-owned businesses. There are a ton of businesses open in Lancaster County and specifically in the city that are owned by immigrants. Come to Southern Market when you want to go out to eat the next time and work at one of the, and eat at one of the food court vendors. Assets is upstairs at Southern Market. Many of the food court vendors there at the new Southern Market, some of them are refugees. Many of them, almost all of them, are people of color. Eat at restaurants that are not owned by people that look like you. Buy Christmas presents from a store in downtown Lancaster. If you ever think about getting catering for something, think more a little bit more strategic about where you're going to get your catering from. It's amazing. Most of the businesses that we find that people want to start are in the food industry. Many people that come to Assets with a business idea, it's around food. So catering is often something that people that want to start a business can get into. So the next time that you're thinking about choosing a caterer, do some research. Find a local caterer that's a person of color, that's an immigrant, and many of them are going to have tremendous tasting food that you may have never tried before. So remember that as Jesus followers, we are called to the moral part of what does it mean to be a Christian. But how we treat people, the orthopraxy part, is just as important. Don't let society tell you different. Don't let politicians tell you different. They have to go together. And just read the prophets, read the Sermon on the Mount, read many of Jesus' parables. He does not separate them. Orthodoxy and orthopraxy. Don't separate them out. Thank you.